Welcome to Wild Kingdom Radio, a bi-weekly podcast that explores the world of foraging, sustainability, and natural medicine. With each episode, you'll hear from guests who offer insights on how to naturally enhance your health, increase longevity, and build community. Wild Kingdom Radio is brought to you by Wild Kingdom, a mushroom and herbal extract company that harnesses the power of nature to help you live better. As a proud partner of One Tree Planted, every purchase from our online store generates a donation to forest restoration worldwide. Check us out at wildkingdomextracts.com. Wild Kingdom. Nature is wild. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Wild Kingdom Radio. I'm your host, Neil Tenier, and today I'm thrilled to be bringing you today's episode, which is about my all-time favorite wild super herb, pine pollen. Now, even though pine pollen has thousands of years worth of history and use in Chinese medicine for treating everything from fatigue to erectile dysfunction, there are still not that many companies that offer it in extract or powder form, which my guess is because it's incredibly difficult to harvest as it's so easily swept away by the wind, and that the best quality pine pollen comes from some of the most remote places on earth. Now, very amazingly, my two guests, Burgess Andre and Saeed Mushtaq from Canadian Pine Pollen Company, have mastered the craft of making extraordinary pine pollen products made from wild harvested pine pollen found in the benevolent wilderness of Canada. In today's show, we're not only going to delve into the health benefits of pine pollen, but you'll also get to hear some amazing stories from Burgess and Saeed about their time spent in the wild and how it's really inspired their modern lives. Saeed even gets to touch upon his experience as a naturopathic doctor and how he uses pine pollen in his practice. So before we get into it all, I just wanted to take a second and say thank you so much for your listenership. We're only three episodes in, and already the positive feedback and support have been really inspiring. So if you like the show and want to help us continue to grow it, please share it with your friends and family, and also leave us a rating and review on whichever platform you listen to us on. That will help cool people just like yourselves find us. So once again, thank you so much, and let's go ahead and kick things off. So without further ado, I bring you Burgess and Saeed of Canadian Pine Pollen Company. Welcome, everyone. I want to welcome our guests, Saeed and Burgess from Canadian Pine Pollen Company. I'm really excited to have them on. They have such an awesome company that deals with my favorite wild food, pine pollen. So Burgess and Saeed, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Cool. So kicking this off right away, maybe you guys can jump into your personal stories and let the listeners know how you got into pine pollen or how it sparked your interest, and then what inspired you to start your company.
Saeed and I have had a relationship of being friends for a long period of time. Saeed's a naturopath doctor, and actually met him. We were both in Yellowknife at the time as a patient. Actually came to see him because I was having some skin problems. From there, Yellowknife was a small town. We just became friends, and he's somebody that I've always kind of had questions about, nutrition and all types of health things, and some like kind of a great sounding board, someone that was very educated and into health himself. I always valued his advice and expertise and whatnot. And I was kind of always looking, like we were both kind of looking, I think, for neat business ideas of some sort. But, pine pollen just came across as a curiosity, I think an interest. It was something we came across of, something I asked him briefly about. And there's been a lot of other things I asked him about before, but nothing seemed to spark his interest, such as pine pollen. And then we sourced something with some pine pollen. We couldn't really find anything sourced outside of North America. Everything was coming from Asian cultures and for us, mostly China. I think that was kind of the initial spark of interest, knowing that we come from a country like Canada, which is vastly populated with pine trees and lots of forests. We went out and, we just wanted an excuse to get out and experience nature a little bit more. And this was just a good way to get out there and do that. And then from there, the company grew just based the fact of came from a place of personal interest more even than a company at first, just knowing that we wanted to get outside more. And we were supplying ourselves a source of pine pollen as fresh and as pure as it could get. There was a lot of people around us that were interested in it. And, you know, that kind of grew into the next natural progression of let's provide it to people that are interested in it.
Very awesome. cool. Saeed, did you want to give a little background on yourself as well?
Yeah, that's pretty much summarizes it. I mean, it's there's a lot of natural health products and natural health ingredients. In some ways, every time Burgess would bring an idea, I thought, well, okay, it's been done. Somebody else is doing this. If we were to actually get into this, we would just be replicating something that's out there. But pine pollen had its unique space and place because nobody else was going after it. In fact, it wasn't really well known. When Burgess approached me with the idea of pine pollen as a supplement, what really captured my imagination was the fact that I'd gone through school and I knew about hundreds of herbs and I'd used them therapeutically in practice, but I had no clue about pine pollen. They hadn't covered it in school. Off the herbs that I knew how to influence hormones with testosterone in particular, there was a handful you could count, and pine pollen wasn't introduced as part of that. So the fact that there was this, you know, natural source and it's something that, we could actually go get ourselves was really intriguing. And the idea of changing the rhythm of, the city life of being in and out of work and office and drive in and drive back and being able to take a couple of weekends in the summer and just go into the field and just be away from the city was what really got me interested in the first place. But then it's kind of turned into a business because we find out there was more individuals like ourselves that wanted the Canadian sourced pollen or rather pollen sourced outside China. It's gone from a place of, providing a space for us to change the rhythm of life and go into the field and harvest into a full-on business that's come full circle into, pushing me more into the office and more in front of the computer to get things going. it's an awesome ingredient. It's always fun to be out there too. This year we put a lot of hours in the road, trying to, basically go against Mother Nature, and how quickly things were blooming, but it's been a fun few years. For sure.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, I can definitely relate in the fact that, when we started our company, at first too, it was so amazing to get out of the cities, get in the fresh air, be with the mushrooms, feeling all good. And then once it grows, it's like, oh man, like I got to go do my taxes behind the computer and I got to fill all these orders. And you're like just dreaming of getting back out there. So I definitely feel that. But that's a big topic we tried to, discuss on the show is that, just the fact of interacting with wild foods just kind of pulls you away from the hustle and bustle of the modern world and gets you back out into nature. It gets your feet literally and metaphorically rooted again, and just enjoying that open air and tranquility. So I definitely noticed that about your guys' company when I discovered you. So glad we share that in common. Cool. Yeah. And there's a lot to unpack here around pine pollen, regarding the health benefits, all the things it can do for you, the quality, yada, yada. But, first I'd really like to unpack kind of where it comes from. I mean, I know it comes from pine trees, but maybe you guys can get into the ecology of it a little bit, like where you guys are located, and kind of, when does the pine tree have pine pollen available, and maybe go into a little bit of how you guys successfully harvest it from the tree.
Yeah. Well, generally up where we are here in Canada, we're based out of British Columbia. We live in Vancouver, but our harvest is on the other side of the coastal mountains where it's more dry, and pine trees like a drier climate. And we start our harvest with ponderosa trees. Now, ponderosa trees are actually more prevalent in the States than Canada by a long shot. We get the northern tip of it up near the Okanagan and certain areas like that at lower elevations. And then what we do is we climb elevation. Basically, at certain elevations, it'll start pollinating at different times. And because in British Columbia, we're full of mountainous areas, it allows us to really climb and like prolong our harvest, which is convenient because once things start pollinating, it doesn't take long for that pollen to really start escaping into the environment and, you know, start nourishing the forest floors and all the insects and all the other things around that kind of benefit from the benefits of having those nutritional things in it around the surroundings and its environment and the ecosystem. But yeah, it's a timely thing. We basically have to get started in certain areas that we know are going to be the first to pollinate and just go from there and climb elevations. This year was a real challenge. Like every year is completely different. We don't know what's going to happen from year to year, but this year with last year's really hot temperatures and a cold spring, we don't know the exact reason, but we ended up having a season where we did not have any pollination of the ponderosa tree. And we've talked to old forestry guys and that have been around for, you know, doing this job for 50 years, and they've never seen that. And I mean, for us, I mean, that's kind of, you know, there is things changing the world. Like we are experiencing, you know, climate change, and that's pretty evident when you have something like this. And then we transitioned to our lodgepole season, thinking that we would be able to make up ground in that and have, you know, a fruitful season with the lodgepole. And unfortunately, even though we were able to get our minimums for lodgepole this year, it was the same thing. We were basically scrambling to find blocks of areas that were actually pickable. So it was a little bit of thing from year to year. Our challenges are always, we always seems like we're presented with a new challenge from year to year. And, you know, from the beginning of our harvest to when we started to where we are now, it seems like we've made so many transformations. That's been such a huge learning process of, you know, Neil, we were discussing earlier on how you went and picked some of your own pine pollen, you know, on your own. And, you know, that's basically how we started as well, like not really knowing much, but going out there and researching and how the best way to be able to extract this pine pollen from the forest. And you know, we went from like picking it and putting it on basically tarps to start and realize, you know, that wasn't the best way to be drying the product. And then, you know, getting areas that was basically, like a greenhouse where we could put it on racks and just let it dry out in there and stuff like that. And, you know, a lot of the other information going forward about the processing is pretty proprietary just based on the amount of effort and research that we've gone into it and stuff like this. But basically drying those catkins out and basically making sure their environment where they're not escaping into the environment has basically been the key for us to be able to help get the product as efficiently as possible. And yeah, working with a bunch of different landowners, even the natives, and just, you know, meeting new people in the area that are wild harvesters, being introduced to other products, people from all over. It's been such a, like, such a great experience all around for all those things. It's been, there's a lot of challenges that go into that, the different areas that we do go into, and some of them are like, a lot of these places are very remote. Like we take our vehicle to places that, you know, we think about afterwards and we're like, you know, we should be a little bit more prepared for some of these roads we go down, not anticipating you're going to go down one road and you're like, well, I'm going to take this next road because I mean, I'm already here. And then you take the next road on top of that. And then you end up in all these kind of crazy places on your maps that you're like, wow, you know, all of a sudden I'm way out here in the middle of nowhere. And it's not often we don't see like a bunch of wildlife. Like, you know, I've seen multiple moose this year, deer, bears. You know, we've had people like Saeed had seen a bear this year. One of the guys I was picking with in a different area was seeing a grizzly and like all this kind of stuff. So, I mean, we're really, really in the mix of it, and we can't really be in areas any more remote. Like this year, we went up to 1600 meters, which I think is pretty, is about as high as we could go on any backcountry roads or logging roads that we could get to. So, sorry, Neil, I don't know if I went off tangent there, but you know, that was just kind of a description of what was going on this year.
No, that was beautiful. Yeah, I feel like that story brought me to the exact place you guys were at. Yeah, I too run into bears now and again when I'm doing mushroom foraging, and it's always an intense situation. Half of you is like in awe, and the other half is just really scared and wants to run away. So I can't even imagine what's like. We have brown bears here, but I know the grizzlies are a little more aggressive. Yeah. So,
yeah, it was actually this time around. It was my first time seeing a grizzly that close. And the all part of it and the scary part of it is that the animal, it just moves so fast. It just covered so much distance. Now, you know, luckily we were in the car and we spooked it because it didn't see us coming. We were just, you know, like this year it was an odd year where, you know, you were in the car, you would drive a little bit, find a patch, harvest from it, and then get back in the car and had to drive a little bit. So it was in the little bit of in between spaces where we were driving in the car where we crawled up on it, and it got spooked, but it just moved so fast. It was so fast. It was unbelievable. When you see how quickly this thing actually covered ground, I was thinking, you know, even if I had like a bear spray on me, if it came charging me, I wouldn't have enough time to pull my bear spray out. It was so quick. But going back to what Burgess was saying, this year was an odd year. It was like the most challenging year we have had. This is our sixth year in picking. 2017 we started, so we went into it thinking that we have seen it all. We know what it is. We know the areas. We know what to hit. We have worked with the pickers. We got it down pack. All we need to do is just basically increase our capacity to harvest, but process. But really, it comes in a flash. The harvest season, it just comes up on you, and it's only 2 months if we stretch it out from like the lowest altitude, driest area available in Canada, all the way to highest altitude, colder areas. It's at the most you got 2 months, and any area you go, literally the buds are on the tree for about 3 weeks, you know, from the moment they show up to the moment they are actually gone, blown into the air. So you got a good 3 to 4 day window, maybe 5 days at the most on any tree, where you can hit them on the right time, where they're actually are going to give you the yields that are worth harvesting. But yeah, this year was the strangest, where, you know, one species did not bear any pollen, and the other species just was patchy, and we hit too many roads for our liking to actually get the pollen. yeah, it's always a challenge. But when you're doing wild harvest, it's always a challenge. We think that we know the areas, but then we spend just the same amount of time scouting, driving on the roads, figuring out the right place, sending people, and then going to help those people with their vehicle problems, or, you know, getting supplies to them out in the bush because they're out of water or this or that. So it's got its own challenges for sure.
Yeah, such is the life of a wild forager, right? I mean, you Mother Nature is unpredictable. You never know how the season's going to be. So it's a huge endeavor to try to you know, build a business around that. So I totally understand what you guys are going through. Just to clarify a little bit for the listeners, I know you guys mentioned that the pine pollen is only available for just a couple of months out of the year, but pine trees, correct me if I'm wrong, have like two sets of pine cones, like the male and female, and the pine pollen itself comes from the male cones, correct?
Yeah, it comes from the smaller fleshy cones that are considered the male cones. The pollen itself is essentially the sperm equivalent of the tree, right? It's the germinating component that falls on the woody cones, and the cones have a biannual kind of cycle. So the pollen lands on the cone, and it starts crawling through the pores. And then once it reaches the seed inside the cone, it just becomes dormant. And in the following year, as the temperatures rise, the pollen starts germinating into the seed, and that's where you get your pine nut, from the combination of the pollen germinating into the female seed of the cone. The fleshy male cones. Well, both cones grow on the new shoots of the tree. So the young shoots usually have either a male cone or a female cone on it. For the most part, they have a male cone on them. But some, it's in the field, it's really interesting because it seems like the trees are, they change their cycle. Some years they have more of the actual cones that we know of. And then some years they have more of the male cones, which would be the pollen cones. And the pollen cones look literally, they look like a flower at the tip of the tree, right? They have this beautiful flower-like looking shape, but they dry and fall really quickly. So if you see them during the pollination season, you're going to be aware of them. But you look at the tree after the pollination has happened, they look like little tiny dry brownish kind of miniature cones, like really tiny miniature cones that are just hanging off, and they usually fall off within a month or two after the pollination is done, and there's no evidence of them on the tree at all. But the cones, the female cones, they stick around for a minimum of 2 to 3 years on a tree before they fall.
Wow, yeah, thanks for sharing that. Yeah, if we're kind of outlining the ecology here of the pine tree, and if anyone listening is thinking, oh man, like maybe, I should go harvest some of my own pine pollen for personal use. I actually have a funny story when I tried to do the same thing. And this is before I found out about you guys, but for our company, Wild Kingdom, we do a pine pollen extract, and we use your guys' pine pollen because it's like the best quality and domestically sourced in North America. So I love that about you guys. But before we got to that level, yeah, in April one year, I was living out in California and was able to go into the mountains, found some good ponderosa pine, and tried to endeavor to harvest this pine pollen. And if anyone's tried to do it before, it's so labor intensive. I mean, like you're fighting against wind, one thing where it's the wind is just naturally blowing the pine pollen everywhere. That's how it gets to the female cone to germinate it, right? And I went out there with like a brown Whole Foods bag. I'm shaking the catkins into the bag. I'm snipping them off, trying to test out what works great. Filled up my bag, took it back home, cut a hole in the bottom of it. Put it through a couple of sifters to get all the debris and the cones out of the way. And after 6 hours of picking and labor, I came away with like 8 grams of powder, which you can't really do much with. So I was like, oh man, there's got to be a better way. And yeah, when I found you guys, I thought, oh man, these guys are like doing what I'm doing with mushrooms, but with pine pollen, and like they got it figured out, and they have this awesome company, and I was so excited to work with you guys. And kudos to you guys for taking this on. I mean, it's a huge endeavor. I can't say that enough. Like harvesting pine pollen is really one of the hardest things. I mean, I tell people the easier way is probably to just park your car under a pine tree and lick off the pine pollen that falls on your car. I always kind of make that joke.
Yeah, absolutely. It really doesn't make much sense. Like, hey, like, I think if there's one message we want to send to everybody out there, and like one thing we can like let people encourage people to do out there is get outside. That's really the main reason why our company was started in the first place was because of that reason, and I just can't tell you, but like I hope people can get a chance to get out there and really get to a chance to experience picking pine pollen themselves. And I know it is a challenge, and I mean I think it puts in perspective on how challenging it is to actually get the product. It is like it's created an abundance in nature, but I mean it is so potent and so powerful, basically. It feels like you can spend all kinds of time and effort picking it, and you just at the end of the day you end up with so little. I mean it really makes sense to pick it on a larger scale opposed to just going out there for a day or two. Like that's you got to have people that are actually that know what they're doing out there and actually do it on a consistent basis, and then also just have all the means out there to be able to actually process it properly and all that kind of stuff to make it really worth your while. But it is challenging, but also that's what makes it fun too at the same time.
Yeah, traditionally, it's when you think about like with the natives of the boreal forest, going all the way back to like Canadian natives or even like the Northern Europeans and the Russians, it was used as a starvation food, right? So it was used when there was in the springtime where you've run out of all sorts of food and the berries are not se in season and it's like the end of the winter, just the beginning of the spring. And when you think about any type of a starvation food, it's the whole idea with it is that it takes it you're putting a lot more effort into getting it than it's worth an easy lifestyle. But it is. It's like you just you go in and the catkin is there and it looks big and lush and it looks like wow, this is amazing. It looks beautiful. But you pick that and you're only going to get 1 to 2% of that in the volume of pollen. So it's a lot. It definitely like I it's we do want people to go out there and pick this because it's. Even if it's like picking a little bit from if you have a pine tree in your garden that blooms just the sense of it because it is a nutrition that's available and although it's it comes in small amounts because of the amount of effort that goes into getting it but it's really packed and it's really nutritious. There isn't anything else that packs as much plant androgens and plant enzymes into cells. Like the only other equivalent would be bee pollen, bee collected pollen. But bee collected pollen is generally from flowers and grass, and it has le a lesser potency in terms of what it packs. But I mean, you see, it's like that's the only source of protein and. Some of the starches, well, not starches, but mainly the only source of protein in the bees' diet, right? They don't, that's their protein comes from bee pollen. So it's pretty nutritious and it's just the other thing that happens when you're out there is not just getting the pollen, it's just you're immersed, like you're in the Japanese culture, they call it the sea bathing, like forest bathing. You're immersed in the forest molecules, right? You're immersed in these pinenes and these aromatic herbs that the pine trees are just releasing into the atmosphere. And of in itself, that's healing. And also the idea of like being away from the structures, the city structures you build around ourselves that provide our sense of security. When you're out and surrounded by raw nature, you definitely get a sense of how you get a better perspective of who you are and what you are in the greater context of the earth and life. So that's those are the parts that have been rewarding for us being out there and being able to do this year to year. And if it wasn't for the pain and the challenges, we probably wouldn't remember those parts.
Yeah, fair enough.
Wow. Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, I can't say enough. Like, I'm so happy to hear that coming through you guys, 'cause yeah, people don't really understand the endeavors of trying to make a commercial wild business and do things sustainably, and do things the right way. But yeah, the reward at the end of the day is this feeling of feeling, just for lack of a better term, connected. So yeah, so happy to hear that from you guys. Yeah, so also too, Saeed, you were starting to talk about kind of the nutritional benefits of pine pollen, and that in and of itself, I think, is a huge topic to unpack. I guess maybe a good place to start would be there's typically two forms of pine pollen that someone who's looking to try it will find if they search on the internet, right? They'll find pine pollen powder, which you can put in your smoothies. I know people are even using it as like flour to make like breads or baked goods. And then the other form you'd find is a tincture or herbal extract form. So maybe can you guys go into the health benefits of each, how they differ, how they're the same? Maybe we'll start there.
So the powder itself is really like food. It's traditionally was used as starvation food in traditional Chinese textbooks. It is used as a tonic food. They add it to a cake recipe. There is a Chinese pollen cake recipe, actually. They mix it up with flour. They made it in soups. They added it to soups or different decoctions. So when you look at the powder, it's packed with lots of protein. It's got a ton of vitamins and minerals. It's got a lot of flavonoids that gives it that yellow color. And the whole purpose of it is, it's you got a single cell floating into the air. Usually that floating happens in a sunny day, or in a non-rainy day, in a non-cloudy day when there's wind. So the pollen is blowing through the air, and it's getting exposed to all sorts of UV radiation and environmental exposure, so which is going to damage its DNA, right? So you got a single cell floating into the air. It's got to protect itself against that UV radiation. That's why it's packed with these antioxidants. When you have the powder, it's a good source of antioxidants, it's a good source of enzymes. And then when the plant germinates, when the pollen germinates, so like if you leave it in water for as little as an hour or so, it starts germinating. That germination is the same thing as like your nuts or seeds germinating or sprouting. That releases enzymes, that activates the enzymes in there. So it's got a lot of nutrients. It's loaded with pretty much everything and anything a living cell needs to grow and to germinate. So as food, it's got that capacity. So you can add it to teas, to coffee, to smoothie and whatnot. And generally in that scenario, you're getting the quote unquote nutritional benefits of it. So the food benefits of it as a source of compact food. But one of the classes of molecules that are in there that makes pollen unique is the phytoandrogens, the plant androgens. So things like testosterone, DHEA, progesterone, those are the main three that we know of. But also there's a whole group of these molecules, these androgens that are termed as brassinosteroids. So they're steroids, so hormones, but they belong to the brassinol family of steroids, which are plant steroids that are used all across the species by the germinating cells. So wheatgrass has some of this stuff. If you take like alfalfa sprouts, it will have some. They all have brassinosteroids in them, and the steroids are responsible for that quick, fast growth of the germination. So pine pollen packs quite a bit of phytoandrogens because its germination tube is the longest of all pollen. Its germination size is the biggest, so it packs quite a bit of it. And when you compare it to all the other sorts of pollen, it's got the most amounts, and it has it in nanogram amounts, which is not huge, but plant androgens have this aspect of reacting with our receptor sites reversibly, in the sense that they bind and modulate, and they go and bind and modulate to another receptor, so they have additive effects. And what brings that out, what can help concentrate that and increase the absorption of androgens, is if you get it in an alcoholic extract, because alcohol has the capacity as a solvent to dissolve these androgens, because they are essentially a fat-based molecule, so they're cholesterol-based molecules. All androgens, all hormones are derivatives of cholesterol in our body. In the same sense, because alcohol has the capacity to dissolve this and make it more absorbable, then getting a tincture or a liquid extract, you tap into the medicinal benefits of the pollen. It comes in two forms, generally powder or tincture. Powder, we think of it more as a food additives. It can be added to recipes. There's no kind of caution around it or use of it. Whereas tincture is one of the things, because it becomes medicinal, it becomes so potent and impactful. One of the things about it is that, well, you know, when we got our natural health product NPN number for the tincture, one of the criteria was for us to actually caution against use during pregnancy or for adults under the age of 18, which at therapeutic dosage, right? So that's taking 800 milligrams above of the extract, because it is so impactful. Whereas powder, it can be used by all age groups. It is a food. And the rule of thumb with food is don't overdo anything. So you don't want to be taking like the powder, more than 3, 4, 5 times a week if you're taking it for its food impact. But if you're taking it for its nutritional impact, that's a whole different story. You stick to more of a dosage regimen. And that powder can come handy for people that just don't want alcohol, right? Like if somebody's doesn't want to take alcohol in their supplements, they can stick to the powder instead of the tincture.
Very cool. Yeah, that was, wow. I feel like I learned a million things right there.
There's some additional benefits to the powder too. Like, I mean, it's got a lot of good bacteria and enzymes in it. It's also really good for detoxification as well. Like it's a great binding agent for taking a lot of those xenoestrogens out of your body. A lot of those environmental toxins, a lot of those plastics that we get exposed to on a daily basis. So that's another cool thing about the pine pollen itself, is the ability to actually extract some of those, you know, harmful stuff that we accumulate over in our body over time. And yeah, again, like just touching on that tincture, you know, somebody that's very active with a, you know, active lifestyle with sport, you know, getting those extra little bits of androgens in you to help heal faster and actually recover quicker. And sports injury is another thing. People dealing actually from, you know, just one of the best things we hear about the product is, you know, people that are, you know, feeling a sense of well-being after taking the product for a while. Like it's filling some kind of nutritional gap in their diet that is maybe they're not getting in their regular routine of nourishment. But people sense like, since I've been taking this, I just feel like I'm in a better mood. I feel happier. I feel better, which is, you know, that's really cool. You don't really hear that too often when you start supplementing with someone, that your sense of well-being is improved by taking a specific product. Saeed, obviously, in his clinic is treating numerous people. He's treating people with concussion issues with pine pollen, and he's had tremendous success with that part of the protocol. People dealing with andropause or menopause, he's had tremendous success, especially with women going through menopause, taking the pine pollen. Like, again, it's helping mitigate those influctuations of hormonal, you know, kind of irregularities and all that kind of stuff. You know, younger people that have problems with their periods and whatnot, like women and stuff like that, taking the product. It's actually shocking. Like a lot of people think that pine pollen is more for men than women. And it's, you know, that's something that needs to be addressed and kind of discussed in further detail. Like women have a taboo against, you know, testosterone and taking it in their body, but you know, it's just as important for women to have these balance of hormones in their body as it is for men to have, you know, the amounts of testosterone in their body as well. And probably so you'd be able to emphasize on this a little bit more, but you know, these are the calls that I get from people, or the testimonials that we get, which, like, you know, if you are at all like on the fence about, ordering pine pollen, like listening to some of the testimonials or looking them on the website it's pretty cool to see like the wide range of different benefits people have, described what has been the best thing since taking the product has been. So
yeah, incredible. The first time I heard about pine pollen, this is what blew me away, and I think a lot of people experience this too, but you talked about it being for men and women, but I think there's an accent in the benefits for men because when a man reaches about age 30, we kind of peak in our testosterone production, right? It's like every year gradually naturally, we start to produce less and less testosterone. That's part of aging, right? But pine pollen was presented in the fact that because it's so rich in these androgens, fancy word for sex hormones, and free testosterone, DHEA, which is a precursor to testosterone, and it has this androgen modulating effect, it can actually help aging men maintain healthy levels of testosterone, if not keep it at its peak or even elevate it. I've even heard that, if you're a man that like loves beer, you got a nice little beer belly, chances are you're probably a little more dominant in estrogen in your body. But pine pollen can help reboost your free testosterone and even bring down some of that estrogen. So that's kind of how it was presented to me. And I think so many men really like hearing that because I think, it's something that every man is, no matter what, naturally going to face in their life.
Oh, and don't get me wrong. Like, there's definitely a benefit for men for taking it. I just want to make sure women know that they shouldn't be scared to take it. And there's a lot of women that do benefit from it as well.
Yeah, it definitely gives men an edge because it's when you look at the plethora of herbs or natural food sources available for boosting testosterone. In terms of your pantry, you got saffron, you got fenugreek seeds that are helpful. You got cardamom, and they all help with testosterone support, but they don't have testosterone. They don't have progesterone, or they don't have DHEA. So pine pollen is unique in terms of men's formulas or men's health. And at the same time, it is true that a little bit of androgen goes a long way in the female body. So a lot of females taking it, athlete females or menopausal or postmenopausal females taking it, they get a really, really awesome impact. And let's not forget about progesterone, because progesterone in the male body is quite impactful too. It's underplayed. It is considered an androgen. So in the female body, before you actually make estrogen, you take testosterone and aromatase, which is an enzyme, transfers it to estrogen. So like it's the precursor to estrogen anyhow. And progesterone there it plays a big role in the man's body in terms of some of the excess estrogen that comes from drinking beer or from smoking marijuana. It all blocks your progesterone receptors in the male body as well. So pine pollen can have a balancing impact on that. We live in an environment that's dominated by estrogens, by the way, like alcohol, beer, THC, CBD, xenoestrogens, and environmental pollutants, generally speaking, are impacting these receptor sites in our body. So having a food source that can actually counter that is what makes pine pollen the unique thing it is.
Wow, yeah, that's so important. And I like what you guys said earlier about just, especially with men, gives you like your edge back. But too, for women, I'm always telling, our customers that there's a huge benefit for women too. And one thing I always say is because, I heard that your brain in general, right, for all of its cognition that's going on and energy it's using up, it actually uses quite a bit of free testosterone for its function. So having an herb like pine pollen can help get you to healthy levels of free testosterone will actually help you feel like you have more energy, regardless of your sex. So I thought that was really cool too.
Yeah,
Is that the case?
that's where that's what Burgess was saying. In clinic, I use it for concussion patients. It's not with all concussion patients, but the majority of individuals post-concussion end up with low hormone levels. The pituitary gland gets impacted. It's just dangling in the middle of the brain. So that force of acceleration, deceleration that goes into a concussion generally impacts blood flow to those areas. So individuals end up with lower luteinizing hormone and follicular stimulating hormone, which then goes on to translate to less stimulation of their gonads, testosterone, or the ovaries for the production of the or the adrenal gland for the production of testosterone. So a lot of patients post-concussion lose their cognitive edge. Because of the concussion impact, but because long term it's impacting their growth hormone and it's impacting their testosterone, and so supporting that is becomes key part of getting the cognitive edge back.
Wow, yeah, that to me just sounds crazy. It's but it's true. I mean, this is such an amazing herb we have at our disposal. So yeah, the hype is real. And in kind of going down that road a little more, with our company, we do like a lot of events where we'll be at different markets and we're talking to people and we're constantly educating them on the health benefits of all of our products. And we do six mushroom extracts and then plus pine pollen plus an elderberry extract. But a question we get a lot is like, oh, like when can I feel the effects? And with mushroom extracts, I always say, it's something you feel over time. In 1 to 2 weeks, you might feel like you're sleeping better, your digestion's improving, yada yada. So it's something you're gonna notice over a period of time. But when I'm explaining about pine pollen, I'm always like, well, this is the one thing where, if I give it to you now, like in 30 minutes to an hour, you might be feeling pretty good. I notice me personally and anecdotally, the days that I take pine pollen feel so drastically different than the days that I don't. And I think all the things that we were outlining, the uptick in testosterone and energy, it's something you feel kind of like right away. And I was just curious if like the people you talk to in your customer base too kind of report the same thing.
Yeah, I would say for the most part, like I was telling you before, like a lot of our customers are repeat customers. They come back because, they start using the product and they enjoy it so much that they have to adapt it as part of their daily routine. It's just, it's that important to them. Yeah, I had one guy, he's getting ready to go on a trip somewhere and he was in frantic, like he thought he had more pine pollen, but he didn't. So he wanted to order six bottles to make sure he was covered for his trip.
Yeah.
When I'm without my pine pollen, I'm a different person. He goes, I don't know what it is. Like people come up to me and talk to me when I'm taking my pine pollen. I've never heard this before. But he goes, this is, I have a sense of confidence when I'm on my pine pollen and I'm taking it regularly and I feel so good that he goes, it's just something that I just don't want to be without. And I was having a good laugh and I was just like, that's great, man. I'm happy we can help you. And yeah, for sure. We'll get it to you as soon as we can. So, we made sure we could get it out to him and get it by the weekend, by the time he was getting ready to go on his trip and all that kind of stuff. But we generally have people, we got a character of about 80 years old who's been ordering our stuff for years, and I don't know how many orders he's made, but that's something that we can always see regularly every couple of months. He's making his order and stuff like this. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, myself personally, like I was telling you before, like I generally take it like the powder pretty consistently, but tinctures here often, but I definitely notice when I'm not taking it. It's just it's something that I feel personally, I just don't have the same amount of get up and go kind of like, kind of that energy to just get the day and excited about going and all that kind of stuff. I feel like I'm a little bit more hesitant to do things, a little bit more lazy and all that kind of stuff. So I myself personally notice that it has a positive effect on me as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
My personal experience would be more like I'm reserving the tincture for another 5 to 10 years from now. I'm in my mid-40s, so I wanna maintain that therapeutic kind of dose for a little bit later on. But right now I take the powder on a daily basis, pretty much working days of the week, so 4 days a week or 5 days a week. Most of my experience has been basically prescribing it to patients, based on their hormone panels or based on their symptoms. And some get an impact right away. Generally, I tell them, give it a couple of weeks for it to show an impact. Like in menopausal women or premenopausal women, when they get hot flashes, within as little as a week to 2 weeks, they start noticing an impact. It's really quick. And in terms of like libido and actual sexual energy, in men that have, let's say, lost their erections, just because of aging, we're not talking about like, if they had a surgery or, they had prostatectomy or whatnot. It's just that morning erections are gone, and they can't get firm. Again, with the tincture at the moderate to higher dose, that comes back within as little as a couple of weeks. And then I do get athletes that are pushing a lot of iron and bodybuilding and whatnot. And with those, the response I get is that if they were to take it before a workout, they can actually push a little bit more weight, or they got a little bit more, bounce to their feet when they are doing a HIIT exercise, a high intensity interval. So if they can push themselves just a little bit further, just that extra 10 minutes, without the fatigue and an easy recovery the next day. So it is quite impactful. It's amazing how impactful it is.
Wow, yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up. I was actually going to ask about it because, yeah, one of the things I was so amazed about was hearing that for like thousands of years in Chinese medicine, pine pollen was used as like a natural Viagra, so to speak, to help with erectile dysfunction. And yeah, it's something real that a lot of people go through, and I know personally a lot of people that have used pine pollen to help that along and had a lot of success. So yeah, really glad you went into that. That's really amazing. So yeah, in I feel like we unpacked a lot of things in there. I think to kind of just recontain all of that before we get into the quality components of pine pollen. So just to recap, if you're someone that kind of just doesn't want to try alcohol or doesn't feel like they need the androgen benefits of pine pollen, like the powder is the safe route to go. It's got tons of nutrition. You could put it in smoothies, water, your coffee, something you can do more tonically every day and just kind of treat it as like a really high quality nutrient dense food. But if you're someone who, male or female, want to feel like you have more energy, trying to be more active, like you're a bodybuilder, or just want to get those androgen effects, the tincture is the way to go. That's correct.
Yeah. You know what? There's one other thing I'd like to touch on. Like a lot of people, yeah, are not wanting to take the alcohol tincture and whatnot. But this is a really cool biohack, or not a biohack, but I guess a pine pollen hack that Saeed discovered, I would say probably a couple of years back. And it goes back to the whole germination process of the pine pollen. And he discovered by putting it in a glass of water at room temperature, the pollen itself, maybe with a little bit of sugar. And then looking at it through the microscope, you can see that it starts germinating, like it does that sprouting process. And effectively, by doing that, you're just naturally cracking the cell in a way, and you're getting better, you're getting a better absorption rate of the actual beneficial compounds inside of it.
Wow. Yeah, very cool. I think it's like you said, it's like germinating your almonds or something. Like you're getting all
Exactly.
that
And
acid away and
And that's touching on maybe something we'll get into, why we decide to actually leave our product, uncracked. And because it's still a living product. Like our pollen, you can go take it and germinate a tree with. So, leaving as a living food and actually having the ability to still germinate for us is like really important. And I mean, that's one of the cool reasons why not exposing it to the oxidization and exposing all those nutritional kind of treasures inside of it and depleting it to you know, and you know, like just, you know, like just whatchamacallit, I would say, like, guaranteeing its freshness is natural protection. What is it? Is what it is.
Right, right. Very cool. So yeah, here's like a big question for you guys. So to give some context, you know, one of the reasons why in our company we decided to wild harvest our mushrooms and our extracts was because, you know, the alternative is to source them from farms in China or other parts of Asia. And with that comes like a lot of quality issues. Like, they've become kind of infamous over the years that, you know, the mushrooms that you're purchasing, they may not be those mushrooms, or that instead of getting mushroom fruiting bodies, you're getting myceliated grain, which just has a lot of starch and not much mushroom. And also too, the pollution in Asia is a little out of hand. So mushrooms bioaccumulate pollution more than plants. So that's an issue. So, you know, I just recognized there was a much safer route to just wild harvest what we have here grown by nature locally. And also too, wild mushrooms are a little more nutrient dense than mushrooms that are cultivated. So it just, from a quality standpoint, it was safer to do it here domestically. And the benefit too is a much lower carbon footprint. I know also too, I think you guys are the first that I've came across that wild harvest pine pollen in North America. The alternative also is Asia, but do you guys see those same kind of quality issues in pine pollen as well?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, again, like, we didn't want to consume something that we couldn't guarantee was, you know, fresh. You're exactly, you touched on all those points. We don't really know exactly what's inside there and inside the pine pollen we're getting from somebody else. And the sense of knowing that we're eating a product that is 100% pine pollen that we've harvested, and we're completely involved in every step from the harvest right till the final product is, you know, for us, we know that whatever's in this product is exactly what we're getting from the forest, and it's done in a clean, ethical way as well. I mean, so we're consuming something based on the fact that we ourselves personally didn't want to ingest anything that we couldn't be 100% sure was like coming from premium source. So the way around that was making sure we got it ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. The quality. The quality is a key thing. It's, you know, it's pine pollen is pine pollen, regardless of what tree you get it from, whether it's, you know, the mason pollen or Chinese pollen or Pinus tabuliformis or ponderosa or lodgepole. From comparing like the basic chemical composition of what they are, they're identical. It doesn't matter, you know, if you take it from white pine or short pine or pitch pine or whichever it is. It's as long as it's pine pollen, it's pine pollen. But the quality issue arises. There's several quality issues. You know, doing the quality assurance process of our company and having to answer a lot of questions that buyers have, and just the good manufacturing practices or safe quality food practices make you think about. It is one of the foods or one of the ingredients that has got the highest amount of food fraud potential. There are companies that in China that actually mix it with cornstarch as a starting process. It's actually in their product, the standard operating process, where there's some cornstarch is used as an additive into the crack cell pollen. It just makes the flow through, you know, packaging and whatnot a lot easier. The other issue is Let's say you do your due diligence and you buy and import from China a crack cell potter that doesn't have any other additives to it. And you do your due diligence and run your heavy metal testing and environmental, PCBs and pesticides and whatnot, all of that. But what happens is that what's in the market is a crack cell pollen. So you've taken this naturally existing cell that has the capacity to protect itself against oxidative damage, and you've just cracked that wall. Which you're exposing it to air and you're exposing it to oxidation. Before we went out getting our own pollen, we actually ordered a few batches of different sourced Chinese pollen from China to see, to do a market test online for ourselves to see if there was a market for it, but also to see what it looks like. And when you compare the tinctures, we do see that oxidation effect. Like it's browner, it has a stronger smell to it, and so it's gone through oxidation for sure. So that's one of the main qualities, like the quality distinguishing factor between our pollen. Other than we were there, we picked it, we processed it, we bottled it and jarred it. We know all that whole process. Is the issue of cracking. The other issue, aside from the cracking when it comes to quality, is sterilization. Pollen it grows a lot of mold on it. It naturally has a lot of yeast and mold on it. And the yeast and mold grow really quickly because the starch is a big component of pollen. The bulk of methods that are used for sterilization the imported pollen is in China is the process of microwave sterilization. In microwave sterilization, you basically run the pollen through a tunnel of microwave or any herbs. A lot of the herbs, the downside of its of import is that that's how they've been sterilized. They've been sterilized with microwave tunnels. So you're essentially getting a microwaved food that's quote unquote is supposed to be a source of like antioxidants and superoxide dismutase and this and that. But when you do study, when you look at animal studies, there's this one study that just blew me away. Burgess and I were looking at increasing our capacity, and looking at these microwave tunnels was one way of increasing capacity because you can just like process so much in so little time. But the deciding factor for me was this study that they've done, crossover studies of rats fed on the same food that has been warmed up in a pot or that has been microwave warmed up. And within 3 weeks of feeding them on this regimen and then looking at their oxidative stress, the rats that were fed on a microwave food, they have lower superoxide dismutase, they have lower vitamin C levels, and their oxidative stress is higher. And then they do crossover. They take these rats and feed them on good food, and then the other rats feed them on the microwave food, and then the same thing happens. So there's clear evidence that you microwave food, you reduce its oxidative antioxidant potential. So our quality assurance as far as like the sterilization process is, and that's where we have perfected the processing is our drying processes don't allow for any of this mold and yeast to start growing on the pollen. So effectively, like our drying allows us to get the pollen into a state where its mold and yeast levels are below accepted levels as far as good manufacturing processes go, so that we don't have to actually microwave this or sterilize it in that way. So those would be the main two quality issues that I would bring up with our pollen versus what we know of the outside sources. A, whole cell, live cell. B, no microwave gone into the processing of the pollen.
Wow, I feel like I just learned a ton there. Yeah, I had no idea that that's how they sterilize things coming out of foreign countries.
All the herbs, any herb that you see in the market, because it's that as far as food safety goes, mold and yeast and bacteria are the main kind of food safety issues. So like when you get a certificate of analysis for a product, it's the always the question is, well, how did you sterilize this? Was it done with UV? Was it done with X-ray? Was it done with microwave? Or was it done with gas, right? So those are the four ways you got going. And microwave sterilization is so easy because not only it sterilizes, it also drops the moisture level in the product really quickly. So now you got a product that's been sterilized and it's low in moisture, so the chances of anything growing on it is less than other methods.
Wow. Yeah, and you know, too, the funny thing is that I've definitely seen lots of pine pollen specifically that comes from China, and they're always advertising it as cracked cell wall pine pollen as this beneficial thing. But if I heard you guys correctly, cracking the cell wall kind of compromises the ability of the pine pollen individual cells to protect itself from UV radiation, etc. Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, it's UV radiation and also just exposure to air, like exposure of the nutrients to the air. There is some point to cracking the cell. As far as the powder is concerned, when you crack the cell, you make the starch component and the protein component more accessible to digestion. The cell walls of the pollen are really, really strong. Like it's one of the auxins, the proteins that make the cell wall are so strong that archaeologists are actually using pollen that they dig up from the bottom of lakes and whatnot as a way of like figuring out what was going on in the environment years back, because these things just stay there. Like it's they're the bacteria don't break them down. At the most, like our digestive system can ho poke holes into them. But poking holes releases the inside in anyways. But so there is cracking the cell increases our capacity, our human capacity to digest it, get more proteins out of it and more carbohydrates out of it. But the reason we decided not to go that route is if you want protein, go get, hemp seeds or go get walnuts. Or, if you want carbohydrates, have brown rice or have quinoa. You're not getting pine pollen for protein or for carbohydrates. You're taking pine pollen for its antioxidants, enzymes, and primarily for its phytoandrogens, its testosterone, DHA capacity. So, I think the logic behind the Chinese the Chinese pollen is essentially a state-run business where there's four companies that are heavily invested by the states that run the whole industry there. The whole idea around cracking is A, let's increase its nutritional value, right? Its food value by increasing its calorie and protein. And then B, let's make it easier to handle, because if you've actually ordered pollen from us and played around with the pollen in the jar, it moves almost like liquid. So everything that we like, all our jars are hand packed, because if as soon as you put it in a line for a machine to pack this, poof, every pack, every bottle, you lose like a good 10, 15% into the air when the machine comes in and dumps it. But when you crack it, it's got that flowery kind of movement to it. So it can be packaged easier. It can be handled easier. So there is points for cracking. We've just definitely tried to stay away from it, mainly to maintain the impact, the therapeutic impact of the pollen.
Wow, yeah, that's incredible. Yeah, it almost kind of seemed like, yeah, cracking has more benefit for the manufacturing of pine pollen rather than the getting those phytoandrogens and making it more medicinal for the consumer. And yeah, I've actually had people write into us or call us, confirming that the pine pollen we used was uncracked because there's quite a few people that have learned exactly what you said over the years, and they feel like they want something, that hasn't been as processed. So I think that's a huge point right there. So yeah, I feel like we just unpacked a lot. I mean, between the ecology of pine pollen, where it comes from, the health benefits of powder and extract, all the good phytoandrogens, and now the quality. I'm sure people listening are eager to really check you guys out, check your products out, and get to know them a little better. Where can people find you guys? And what's the easiest way to connect with you?
The easiest way would be on our website, canadianpinepollen.com. If they have any questions, they can always write to us, they can email us. We're also available to some of the stores around, mainly in Canada, but some stores in US. Like we were talking about at the beginning, because of the challenges this year, we have backed away from introducing new wholesalers into our roster. So, fingers crossed, we won't run out of product before next harvest. But it is the easiest would be to our online shop, CanadianPinePollen.com.
Great. Yeah, and you guys also have a beautiful website, super easy to navigate and full of earth tones. Yeah, I just like to surf on there from time to time.
Thanks, Neil.
A lot of hard work went into it. Cool. And yeah, obviously this podcast was dedicated to pine pollen, but we talked about so many things just dealing with nature in general. We talked about, just getting outside. We talked about the animals in nature. I get the vibe from you guys that you guys are nature people and wild food enthusiasts. My question is, what's next for your company? Are there more wild food products that you'll introduce, or do you guys now do other things than just pine pollen? Kind of, what's the scoop on that?
We got a few things in the works. George?
We've gotten some reishi mushrooms. We got some morel mushrooms. Like this year, with our challenges with harvest, we just tried to diverse a little bit more and probably put less emphasis on just pine pollen solely. And we do have access to a lot of great things in nature. And a lot of our pickers have brought this stuff to our attention as well. We want to make sure that we can also give people the opportunity to experience a lot of different nutritional types of medicinal foods from our forest. We're really going out and trying to source things from all around the world when, we're really blessed in our backyard. We have a lot of these things yet to be discovered, used traditionally by natives for thousands of years, used by other groups and of peoples that are just familiar with foraging and whatnot. And these are the types of things we'd like to educate people going forward with, bringing awareness to them and also giving people the opportunity to access them, and also encourage people to go outside and actually maybe get out in the woods themselves and discover these different types of things in their surroundings. And again, like Saeed touched upon before, it's very therapeutic just to be outside, and it also gives you a sense of well-being in your environment and getting out of the city and doing all those things. It's mental health. It's the full circle. People really need to get back into the roots of being outside and also experiencing that. So yeah, we'd like to give people the opportunity to experience, things that they might not be able to have access to all the time. But yeah, we're excited about introducing morels this year for more of culinary purposes. But reishi mushrooms, we're looking to do a tincture with those this year that have been obviously harvested here in Canada. And we do have some other things as well. Like we've been looking at getting a greens mix out for a little bit, and that's something that we want to continue to work on for this year, and all kinds of stuff. So chaga is something that we've been selling for the last little while, and chaga has been used in northern hemispheres for a long period of time, especially like the Russians and the Scandinavians. Growing on birch trees, it's highest antioxidant we know of any type of food out there, and you would know that as much as us, based on being a mushroom person, Neil.
Yeah, you're really
It's
speaking
something
my
that we're,
language now.
yeah, you know, it's something that we're we have access to, and being in a northern climate as well, it's exposed to hormesis, which is basically a little bit of a challenging time dealing with warm and cold temperatures. It's usually a little bit more nutritionally dense. So, I mean, that's something we're proud to do. And then spruce tips has been something we've been selling for a while too. And with all this attention around the COVID, it's been something that's becoming more popular because there was a whole thing about pine needles having specific compounds in there to help prevent the shedding of that COVID virus. And that's not something we like to kind of advertise as the reason why we're selling it. It's been used traditionally. Spruce tips has been used traditionally in indigenous cultures as a medicine for quite a long time. And we're emphasizing on bringing more attention and awareness to that, and maybe doing some tinctures with those as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. That just reminded me of something that I like to point out to people is like, vitamin C is like such a staple like vitamin for human health, right? You can't live without vitamin C. If you do, you get scurvy, right? And when people think about vitamin C, they think about an orange or a lime or lemon, something citrus, right? But those fruits aren't even native to North America. And something I learned was that the native peoples of the Americas, how they got vitamin C was from making teas from pine needles and like hemlock needles and spruce tips. And this one plant taxonomist that I really love, his name is Arthur Haynes. He showed this study where they did a test of 100 grams of orange and 100 grams of a wild food like the wild violet flower. And of that 100 grams, the orange only had about 0 to 200 milligrams of vitamin C in it. And the violet flower, at the minimum, had 1200 milligrams of vitamin C. So at the very least, it had 5 times more vitamin C than an orange. And that goes for so many wild foods, the violet flower, pine needles, spruce tips. So yeah, that's incredible you guys offer that. And yeah, people don't know that how nutrient dense those foods are. So that's really awesome. Great. So, awesome. Yeah. Thanks for sharing your website. That's CanadianPinePollen.com. Head over to their website, check it out. It's awesome. Burgess, Saeed, I really want to thank you guys for coming on. I really love this conversation. I knew a lot about pine pollen. Now I know even more. So, very humbling experience. And thank you so
Yeah,
much for your
no, for
guys'
sure.
expertise.
And if there's something I'd like to leave people with, just when it wraps up around the pine pollen and why it is such a cool superfood is really because it's created nature in abundance. Like it really blankets the forest floors every spring, and it's used as a superfood for all of nature every spring. And for me, that's always something that's resonated. Like if nature's using that as as a superfood to ignite each spring season of the growth period, why is it not benefit for why how could it not be beneficial to humans as well? So, it's kind of got a dual purpose in nature. Yeah, obviously to create more trees, but it is created in such abundance that it is used across the whole ecosystem as a way to stimulate each spring's growth.
And there you have it. Yeah, bringing that around full circle. Amazing.
Well, thanks, Neil. Thanks for having us here. That was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
Yeah, and yeah, I'm excited for what you guys do in the future, and we'll definitely have to have you on again to hear all about it.
Awesome. Thanks, Neil.
All right. Yeah, thanks so much for coming on. We'll talk soon.
You bet.
Sounds good.
All right, guys, there you have it. Burgess and Saeed from Canadian Pine Pollen Company. If you're interested in the products they offer, they were kind enough to leave a discount code for our listeners. So if you head over to their website at CanadianPinePollen.com, you can use coupon code WKRadio10 for 10% off your order. That's WKRadio10 for 10% off your order at CanadianPinePollen.com. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. We'll be back next time with some more amazing guests. In the meantime, if you really like the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on whatever platform you listen to this on. That would help us grow the show and keep attracting some really inspiring guests. So until next time, I'm Neil Tenier. Stay wild.